Fort Hays State University has reopened. President Tisa Mason and Communications Chief Scott Kaysen talk to us about that and more on this episode of the Post Podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you guys. There's a lot going on campus. You did get the students back later last month. Before we get into how things are going, I thought maybe a good way to start this off was talk a little bit about how this reopening plan was set up, and especially on the academic side, how the students were able to stay safe, but also move back to Hays and get back in college.
Yeah, so we have had extraordinary measures going on campus since actually last March when we first decided to go remote. And after managing all of that process, we moved into the summer. We adopted guiding principles. We have a decision matrix, which really we believe, and I believe fully, that we want to problem solve locally and communicate centrally with some accountability. So our faculty and staff have been involved in creating reopening plans for all kinds of not only physical spaces but events that have to go through a central committee called our Critical Incident Policy Group. And those get vetted out there, as well as some more general framework on our processes and protocols. That floats up to me, and I actually have an external advisory group. We have worked very closely, not only myself, but also our Critical Incident Policy Group, with Hays Med, Dr. Heather Harris as their medical director, Eddie Herman as the CEO. Jason Kennedy has just been amazing working throughout the university and making sure that we're in alignment with expectations of the county health department. I have been on the phone almost twice all through the summer with all of the other university presidents from the Kansas Board of Regents. We've been sharing plans and strategies. Obviously, the chancellor at KU as a medical doctor has been really key to helping us as well. We've been on the phone with the chief of staff, Will Lawrence, from the governor's office throughout the planning process, as well as KDHE. And so we feel pretty well equipped to manage what we can manage. And what we think about that is we made some critical decisions. One is the entry testing, which I know you'll have questions about. But our real focus is mitigating transmission in the classroom and on campus and in buildings, because that's where our area of responsibility is. That's where our locus of control is. And I can tell you our students in the classroom and on campus in our buildings are doing a very good job in following our protocols. They're wearing their masks. They're following our protocols. And then we're managing capacity for isolating and quarantine, which is really related more to the entry testing and somewhat to symptomatic testing, and then monitoring the severity of the cases in conjunction with Hays Med. And to date, to the best of my knowledge, I mean, there's only two right now hospitalizations in our county, and to my knowledge, none of those have been students. I think what we're seeing is that, and what I'm hearing from the medical field, is that the disease is morphing a little bit and it's getting even more contagious, but not as severe. So as our students are quarantining and isolating, they're not needing, a lot of medical care.
Yeah, you mentioned the entry testing. I don't know if you want to just hit on that a little bit. My understanding is you basically tested everybody right before the semester started, right?
So we had the opportunity, thank you to some state funding, to work with a lab, and we gave the opportunity to all faculty, staff, and students. They basically received a saliva kit in the mail. They're able to utilize that kit, mail it back off to the lab, and within 48 hours get tested. So a lot of people who weren't feeling ill at all or very ill did get some positive diagnosis, and that's why we did it. We did it because we felt like if people knew in advance, particularly if they weren't having symptoms, they would have the opportunity to do the right thing. And the right thing would be to isolate or quarantine, you know, isolate if they're sick, quarantine if they've been in touch, and that would help mitigate some of the spread when they return to campus.
Yeah, for
James, I'd say, too, that our testing program was voluntary. We didn't test everyone on campus.
Correct.
Oh, okay. But you provided the opportunity for everyone to take the test.
And it was absolutely free. And, in fact, the link has was open until yesterday, all the way through the month of August. So if somebody didn't do one and they changed their mind, they had the opportunity to do this for free.
Very cool. You know, and I think with everything that's going on else in the community and in the county and the discussions that have been had, you know, we're hearing a lot of, well, the students came back and they kind of caused that bump in spread locally. But what's the alternative? I mean, I guess my question would be, what else, or was there any better way we could have done this short of just not having them come back?
You know, and there's been peaks in our community prior to the students, and there's been weddings and there's been funerals, but definitely testing is raising the amount of positives. But in my mind, that is good because then people will be able to take care of themselves. If we didn't do that entry testing, people would have come back and not known they were sick, and the spread would be even worse. Potentially, you know, and our students, our community really relies on our students. We have students who are working. We have landlords who are depending on our students to be in their housing. Our faculty, staff, and students contribute approximately $273 million regionally to the economy. And so, you know, I think we all need to work together to get through this. I'm pleased that our students are doing the right things on campus. We are continuing to educate them regarding on-campus behavior and off-campus behavior. Landlords could help with that, as well as businesses. And I know we have a lot of businesses who have been so supportive, and I want to thank the city commissioners and the County Health and Hays Med. The other thing I want to mention is that we were able to get an allocation of the county Spark money. And so when we isolate our students, we wanted to make sure they weren't on campus. So we have a lot of partners in the hotels that are helping us with quarantine overflow as well as isolation. And we also received money to our staff is going out, checking on those students every day, bringing them all of their meals. And we also received some funding for some gift cards so that they could break up the monotony a little bit and order from their favorite local restaurants. Again, keeping that money local.
Oh, I love that. Do you want to talk a little bit about the community engagement piece on this? Because I know like March to Maine, for example, that kicked off virtually. I think it ended maybe a week or two ago. So there's still those activities that are happening to keep Fort Hays tied to the community, even though there has to be some of that distancing in place.
Yeah, so even since March when all this happened, from day one, you know, Fort Hays has been in such an excellent place in terms of their resilience and in our innovation. But we have said from day one, we're going to convert, not cancel, as much as possible. So we've seen all kinds of different events like March to Maine. And shout out to Melissa Dixon and Sarah Bloom. I thought the March to Maine, other than the fact that we couldn't actually walk down there, was an extraordinarily well done, high engaged event. So we've done different events virtually. We just had our first Foundation August trustee meeting where we had over 60 trustees of the Foundation engaged in a virtual meeting with all kinds of videos and meetings and pre-recorded presentations that actually made the meeting a little tighter, sharpening, and very emotionally engaged with everyone. It went so well. So we're really sharpening our tools and our skills to deliver things a little differently. And some of those practices, I think, will carry over and even sharpen as we move forward into a post-COVID era, hopefully, and hopefully soon.
Right. Yeah, it's got to end eventually. It's some point.
Yes.
So in general, you know, how are things going on down there on campus? You know, are students taken to this new hybrid learning model, or is there some pushback?
Well, it is different. And I walk across campus every day, and I know our provost walks through all the academic buildings, and I stop and engage with students, and I hear some really great comments about how exciting they are. They're really liking it. I've also heard other anecdotes that, you know, it's harder for some people because some people are introverted and some are extroverted, and some people really want more time in the classroom. But the hybrid is, each hybrid class is a little different. They do have contact with their professors. Some of our professors, as usual, are just going above and beyond in how they're learning to engage students in and outside of the classroom. There's been events that have happened with social distancing. And in fact, I was so inspired by some of the information that I'm just starting to learn about, that my next column is going to be exactly about that topic and our extraordinary faculty and how they're engaging students. It is really hard. Not only did they have to reinvent all of their classes and be thinking pedagogically, how do I convert if I have to convert, but they're managing all these class absences as well, with isolation and quarantine, and how do I keep working with the students so that they can stay in the classroom and grade assignments and keep everybody moving. I think our faculty have always been amazing, hardworking professionals, but they are having to work even harder, and they are up to the challenge, and they're doing phenomenally. I mean, you know, the same with employees, right? They're in one day, their family member is sick, so they're quarantined the next for 2 weeks. Just imagine trying to manage all of that in a learning environment. It's extraordinary.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and the thing, and we were talking a little bit about this earlier, and I think the word you used was empowered. You've kind of empowered the instructors to take this on and make it their own. But for a lot of instructors, you know, the virtual piece is something they've maybe never done before. You know, and I think about some of these tenured professors that have been here at Fort Hays for upwards of 30, maybe 40 years. And this is the first time they've ever really had to teach in that manner. That's a whole different world than standing in front of a group of students and, you know, doing it live.
Yeah, you know, I think there are certainly a lot less of those types of faculty at Fort Hays State than there are at the other universities. As you know, we've been in distance learning for more than 20 years and have mm-hmm. done just an extraordinary job and have this certification from the United States Distance Learning Association. But one of our secrets to success is our teaching innovation and learning technology. This is a group of professionals who do everything from course design. At Fort Hays, even if it was just a regular semester and you want to do virtual class, you can't just put it out there virtually. You have to go through instructional design courses and work with our faculty and our TILT professionals to make sure that it is a high-quality, engaging, outcome-driven course. And so, really, those are some other unsung heroes on our campus, not only just always, but they're the same people who are helping now, making sure everyone, whether they're a new professor or a professor that's been here a while and hasn't dipped his or her toe in the virtual world, They are standing by their side. They're helping them with that design. So they can tweak it to their content and their personality, but they're doing it along the side of amazing cadre of professionals and our teaching, learning, innovative technology group. That's a weapon that other campuses don't have and was very much in the forefront of our exploration into online learning.
Well, excellent. Yeah, and that's, as a leader in distance education, this is something we talked about before. You know, Fort Hays was so prepared, or so much better prepared than most universities for this. It's truly incredible the ability of Fort Hays to come together and take on that challenge in a way that other universities here in the state can't.
It's really inspiring, and I'm so proud of everyone and grateful for how hard they have worked.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you, we're quickly running out of time, but anything else you want to squeak in before we go?
You know, Fort Hays is part of a phenomenal community, and it's not just about the university or just about the community. It's about all of us working together. There are so many people, as I've tried to mention just a few of them. The city commissioners have been phenomenal. County Health, the Hays Med, Dr. Wally Wallstrom with our athletics, even, you know, all of the different businesses that our students are going to and how they're being embraced, and the churches working together. And I just want to say a general shout out to everyone. And I know parts of this has been controversial, but still at the end of the day, it's love thy neighbor. We're a strong community, and the more we are together, and I'm so grateful to be here in Hays, America. So I just want to shout out to everyone for helping us figure this out, because it takes all of us.